Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso, dope. So no overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
It's June the 17th, 2015, and I know you're expecting Nick Burnaby, but my name is S.M. Gibson, and welcome to the Anti Media Radio. We are your alternative to the corporate media's agenda. As always, on Wednesday night, as co-host, Mr. DB Schwartz. DB, how you doing, sir?
I'm a little thrown off that Captain Kirk Nick is taking the night off.
Well, Spock's in charge tonight, so that's all right.
That's all right.
And Mr. Jake Anderson, how you doing, sir?
I'm good, buddy. I think Nick moved to China, man. He couldn't take it anymore.
I don't blame him. And we also have a special guest here in the studio with us, one of our great callers that calls in almost every night. Chase, how you doing, sir?
Doing good, man.
Fantastic. I tell you what, before we hit on any of the topics tonight, I'm going to do like I do on my show and give everybody the main statistic for the week. We've had 523 American citizens that have been killed by police officers this year in 2015. That's 523 Americans dead in the streets. We've also had 56 police officers that have died in the line of duty. But the important thing about that fact is only 14 of those have been by gunshots. That they also include getting in car wrecks. They include heart attacks. So the number's a bit skewed. Really only 14 have been killed in the line of duty, but 56 have died in the line of duty. And the gun law happy city of Chicago, we've had 1,135 people be shot this year alone and 197 homicides. And as most everybody knows at this point, Saudi Arabia, our wonderful, great, fantastic ally, has beheaded 100 people. DB, what's your thoughts on all that?
Well, Saudi Arabia is totally understandable. I mean, it's Wahhabism. It's basically what a lot of people that study Islam say it's connected to a satanic kind of branch of Islam. So make of that what you will. As far as the cops go, I just threw you a statistic, SM, that they're killing people 30 times higher than the average American, despite our whole gun violence issue.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing nobody wants to correlate with the problem. I mean, we talked about this a little bit last night on the radio show, but as horrible, and I'm the biggest advocate against the Saudi Arabian government and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the royal family, we've seen 100 people be beheaded so far. We're talking about 523 people dead by cops. No trial, no jury, just dead.
Yep, and it's, you know, they're going to justify it because they broke Sharia law or something asinine, like questioning their betters. And yeah, a heading is just political over there. It has nothing to do with punishment.
And, you know, I heard the argument. So what we had the article go up yesterday, and it's gone pretty semi-viral. You know, it's had over 50,000 shares about the 100 beheadings. And people are sitting there making the argument, well, those people broke a law. Those people broke a law. So, you know, maybe they had it coming to them. And people are so ingrained with this worship of the state, even when they look at it in regards of a Muslim state that they supposedly hate, and it is Wahhabism, like you said, and that really has nothing to do with Islamic culture, they still defend it because our government defends it. And it's just sick to me how they'll fall in line. But if it was Iran, DB, what would our country be saying if that was Iran? They'd be going crazy.
Yeah, full-on invasion because of the human rights violations.
Yeah, absolutely. Jake, what's your thoughts on this?
Oh, yeah, I mean, absolutely. We'd be, I mean, if an American tourist tripped on a rock and stubbed his toe in Iran, we'd be at war with them right now.
Yeah, so. I mean, you're absolutely right, and that's the thing. I mean, we're looking at what Saudi Arabia right now is doing in Yemen. I don't know if any of y'all have caught this story. We've got it up right now on the antimedia.org, and it's Operation Decisive Storm. And there have been over 1,000 civilians killed in Yemen right now, around 1,300, because of Saudi Arabia. And nobody's acting like that's anything. DB, what's your thoughts?
Well, it's the Houthi, I believe it's the Houthi youth movement, and these guys are dropping in droves, but they're being resupplied by Iran. This is a proxy war between Sunni and Shia, between cultures, between Arab and Persian. And if Saudi Arabia doesn't have us to back them up, they're going to get steamrolled. So are we going to put a line in the sand for oil and gas to start World War III? That's the question the average American needs to ask themselves.
Yeah, go ahead, Jake.
Oh, I was just going to ask, is that directly related, of course, to fears over the drop of the petrodollar, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that completely ties into all of this. And, you know, that even to me, that ties in, and I was discussing this with somebody earlier today about, and I don't know if y'all are as aware of this as here living in the South, where you have a ton of people that are huge Reagan fans, but they talk about but they talk about Gaddafi and Reagan, and they talk about how, you know, Gaddafi in the 80s, you know, he reared his head, and he was going to do this, and he was going to do that. And they talk about, well, Reagan put him in his place. And they overlook that Obama basically killed him. You know, it's like you hate Obama here in the South with your conservative viewpoint, but you're proud of Reagan for putting him in his place. Well, Obama killed him. And what was it all over? Just what you said, Jake, the petrodollar. That's what it all went back to. Gaddafi was getting away from that, and he was going to put it in the dinar, and it was going to go back to gold.
Right. Yep.
So
the thing is that the Bretton Woods agreement, if we can call it that, which it really was just we have the A-bomb and you don't, that stuff's ending because the military parity is very close. Yeah, we can destroy the world over. China can too. Russia definitely can, and probably Iran can if they have the bomb as well. So what are we doing here but saber-rattling and having proxy wars and spreading misery?
Well, that's all that we're doing. I mean, it's everything is political to such a level, and this is something that we all are completely aware of. It's not like this is some new grand revelation to any of us. It's all about finances, it's all about corporations, and it's all about politics. The thing that is infuriating to me is, especially us being the anti-media, is the politicians and the media selling this complete garbage rhetoric of saying this has to be done on the basis of freedom. Well, we're going to liberate this country, we're going to do this, or we're going to do that. And it's just complete asinine. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, the war narrative is disgusting, and everyone Everyone knows about it. Everyone disagrees with it, or most Americans, and yet somehow we're unable to elect people that break out of the military-industrial complex. It's almost a national pathology at this point.
I mean, it absolutely is. And I tell you what, I would open this up for everybody here right now. Of all the politicians running, and let's get, well, I think everybody here would agree, no one should really be elected of anybody running, because I think they're all going to serve some sort of interest group or some sort of corporation. Of everybody that's in the race right now for the presidency, does anybody see anybody with any hope? Is there, like, any of them saying anything different, or is it literally just 16 people with the same agenda and two Democrats with the same agenda?
I personally think go ahead, DP.
No, I mean, it's a great point, because a lot of people are kind of speculating that Bernie Sanders is kind of going to do a flip, you know, kind of do a belly flop at the end here and say, you know what, for the good of the Democratic Party, I'm going to concede to Hillary. He's hoping to swoop all his voters with his socialist platform, all the youth, to vote for Hillary, because none of the youth are, let's face it, none of the youth are rich enough to vote Republican anymore. It's just not there. So a lot of times me and Nick surmise that Rubio's going to come out of, you know, left field and win this thing. And that could be true, but only if Hillary gets ripped to shreds. Otherwise, people are still going to vote on the party line.
Yeah, I put up an article today on the site comparing or showing the similarities between Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush, and pretty striking on major things, particularly on them both being major war hawks. I expect nothing but status quo from those two. In fact, I mean, at least with Jeb Bush, we'd be almost fast tracking the train wreck. You know, we'd at least have that going for us. But I think Bernie Sanders has some interesting things to say, but at the end of the day, I don't think he can get elected, and I think he probably will throw his support behind Hillary, and, you know, we'll just have her kind of reappropriate that Democratic Socialist vote and claim to do a bunch of things to pull in progressives and then lie about it once she gets in office, same as Obama did.
Yeah, I think you just hit the nail on the head. And I think, you know, for most people that are at least looking outside the box, the only two people they see are Bernie Sanders or, and correct me if I'm wrong, Rand Paul, Bernie Sanders are the two people they see as outside of the box, kind of. And now we have Donald Trump, but, you know, he is what he is. Maybe that's a complete circus in and of itself.
Have you seen the intense ridicule the guy's getting when he really doesn't need any? I mean, are they afraid that he may be making a few valid points here or what?
I tell you what, as much as y'all know me well enough to know that I would never in a trillion billion years vote for Donald Trump, you know, I'm the guy that looks at politics like it's the WWE. And when Rick Perry announced that he was going to run again, I got really excited because it was just like, oh my gosh, we're going to do this theater again. I hope they just pump him full of painkillers and this is going to be awesome again. He's just going to scream stupid stuff. So when Donald Trump entered the race, I'll be honest, I'm super excited about that possibility because it's going to be crazy and he doesn't need painkillers. Now, as far as electing somebody for a leader, never in a billion years, but.
And it's so awesome watching him get ripped up, like when at the White House Correspondents Center, when Obama kind of, you know, had a few zingers on him, and he just sits there with his pouty face and his ridiculous, clownish little hair. I mean, it's just wonderful watching him get ripped up. That's the only reason it's worth him being in the race. Otherwise, it's just a reminder of the sickening oligarchy that we're a part of.
But listen to this one quote he makes. Somebody asked him about QE3, which we're in the midst of and about to go to QE4, which is just insane. And he said, QE3 is artificial. We're printing money and doing it incorrectly. And it looks good and it makes me look good in all the stock picks I make, but it's not real. Stocks and real estate are going to go up in flames because they're just printing money. I mean, when a guy says that on something like CNN or something, and people may actually go research what the private corporation that is the Federal Reserve does.
And that was a quote by Donald Trump, right, DB?
It was. And I mean, the guys, he has a lot to lose by saying something stupid like that. The guy's probably up there in the $500 million net worth range.
No, he's actually $4 billion with a B.
Is he really? Well, then it's got to be hidden somewhere.
But
yeah, that's pretty that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, of course, he also has an invested interest in fear-mongering, you know.
He does. And I'll tell you the thing about Trump that – and there's so many – this is such a complicated, multi-layered review of him that, you know, you could shred me for what I'm about to say, and I accept that. But on an economic standpoint, and on an economic standpoint alone, I could actually see Trump not being a bad president. Now, that being said, he said that some of the craziest stuff I've ever heard in my entire life about Mexico building this wall and yada, yada, yada. I mean, crazy stuff that just he has no business even getting close to the White House. He's a businessman.
If Donald Trump were president, it'd be like Biff in Back to the Future 2 when Biff has his hotel.
It was! You nailed it! He would be Biff! Even the same hairstyle!
Every city over a million has Vegas rules.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be like this beeline, the alternate universe. We got to go back somehow. We veered off, Marty. We veered off into this alternate universe.
One thing I can give to Trump, one thing I can say about Trump is he is a businessman, and America is a business, and he will run it just like that. He would have it run just like that. I think that's what the point SM's trying to make is
right.
He would run.
Well, it would definitely be the full realization of a complete and total corporatocracy. That's for sure.
Oh yes, of course, of course.
Did the federal government not incorporate when it went bankrupt in 1871? I mean, we absolutely are run by a corporation.
Oh yes.
Oh yeah. No, you're right. We're already there, but I think the illusion. I mean, we would. I mean, I think it would really drive it home for some people. I don't know.
I think it would too, and I think you make a great point. I still think also you make a great point of Back to the Future too. I mean, that's just brilliant that he is Biff.
Absolutely.
But the thing about it is we can sit here and discuss how it's going to be run as a corporation. We're going to put this huge corporate figure in front of the country. And maybe if you do put somebody like that in charge of the country, it's like maybe they're lying to you a little less, like, it's a corporation, and now we're going to put this corporate leader ahead of the country. But at the same time, he says some lunatic things. The wall with Mexico blows my mind. Like, does he not understand building like, these are the same people that sit here and talk about the communists and, oh, the Berlin Wall, it had to come down. So what are we going to do? What's our response to that? Let's build a huge wall.
Who from down there would willingly do that, though? They're like, wait a minute, how are we going to get over now?
Oh, nobody's going to do it on any side. There's a part of the population of the United States that I think would support that, and maybe they'd go down there and, you know, throw some bricks down for it. But at the end of the day, that wall is going to do as much to keep us trapped in here as it is going to be to keep them trapped down there.
Exactly. Maybe they want that compartmentalization. It makes it a little easier to control.
I will say, when it comes down to the whole wall, I mean, it's all, in my opinion, it's all BS. I was just actually reading last night, America's infrastructure has like a D rating. By 2020, we have to invest like $3 trillion into our infrastructure to make it sustainable. Because if we don't, it's pretty much going to fall apart by 2020.
Has that not fallen apart yet, DB?
Oh, it is.
Well, up here we had a bridge fall into the river and a bunch of people ate it. So, yeah, they had to redo every bridge. They're rebuilding everything. It's constant construction up here in Minnesota. But, yeah, back when I was over there, I mean, it looked pristine. I'm sure in places in the Rust Belt, it's awful.
Yeah, I mean, me and my wife were driving through the country the other day, and we went across the bridge, and it was just, I mean, she got so scared she got out of the car. Like, it was that bad. That it was just this fickle kind of put together piece of Lego something. I mean, it was terrifying looking.
It's so unfortunate that our infrastructure is crumbling. You know, all the money we waste on war and whatnot, and we don't even have decent roads and bridges, you know?
So if we account for the $2.3 trillion missing right before 9/11 and the $700 billion bailout, there's our $3
trillion. Oh, that never happened, DB. You know that conspiracy. There were planes, even though scientifically it can't be proven.
That money was spent on the alien base on the moon, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, man. If y'all didn't catch the show last night, we definitely had a caller go there with that last night.
Woo! I thought the Van Allen belt kind of screwed that up.
Wow. I'll tell you what, man. I would so much rather listen to the Beatles and the Van Halen belt. But I tell you what. While we're on – okay, I don't know if y'all are aware – and Jake, when I was in San Diego last, you know, we definitely had discussions about this, you know, away from the microphone, and certain things Rand Paul has done good, and certain things we both agree that Rand Paul has done bad.
Right.
Tomorrow, he's coming out with a plan that says 14.5% flat tax for all Americans, and he's going to do away with the entire IRS code and basically disband the IRS. What are y'all thoughts on that?
Sweet.
I hear do away with the IRS, and I'm just like, that's the greatest thing I've ever heard.
Well, maybe that, but flat tax is no good. That's still, you're still talking major inequality. If while we're going to be taxing...
Now, I agree with you. I'm with you against the tax. I completely am. But you can't say inequality on the basis of it's flat for everybody. And I do understand. Yeah. I get what you're saying, but it's still the same percentage for everybody. So it is everybody treated equally.
Right, but there's an inherent inequality that has already predicated that tax, which is that the money is being consolidated into the hands of the wealthy. So, and I also believe in social welfare. If we're going to have a government, I think that we've got to have if we're going to have this corrupt system, I think the very rich have to be paying more. That said, I mean, yeah, let's tear it all down. Let's tear the whole damn thing down. But while it's still here, flat tax is just benefiting the rich.
I could see that. I completely understand your point, and I do completely understand that I read a stat today, I think by 2019 or 2020, that over half of the world's money is going to be controlled by all the millionaires, basically, that we have now. And it's going to be such a small percentage. And we're definitely on the path to that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's saying, you know, basically that the elite is going to control everything. But for me to get the money out of the hands of the elite, you either have to go completely rogue and have a complete revolution, or you're going to have to go through the hands of government. And that's what terrifies me. I don't trust government to do anything. So how
right.
to transfer that wealth?
Yeah, I mean, it's choose your poison. My poison would be get the money out of the rich's hands and force them to divest it into social infrastructure. But, of course, this is all predicated on us eliminating war and all that stuff. So, I mean, it's a pipe dream anyway we're looking at.
What?
Go ahead.
Jake, you made a great point, man, like eliminating war. And then I know the elite are so scared. How are we going to keep everybody under control and keep them from lynching us and all that? And the truth is, why don't you just become money fairies? Just spread it all out.
Well, we have money fairies. I think we are all aware of that.
Redistribute. Yeah, I mean, what a great that'd be a great disinformation platform. I mean, even if they're doing it for some weird nefarious reason, you know, just half billionaires just walking around handing money out. You know, that's the next social welfare.
Yeah, because what do you crave if you're already extremely rich and powerful, but nobody knows who the hell you are?
Attention.
There you go.
Right.
So make the world a better place and become these massive celebrities. Go, hey, our forefathers were these pretty sick individuals, but we decided to flip the script.
Hey, interestingly, to loop back around to the IRS, I finally saw the documentary about Scientology called Going Clear.
Oh, did you see it? We talked about that when I was down there.
Oh, yeah. I finally saw it, and, you know, it's mind-boggling. Scientology is basically the only group that has been able to not only infiltrate, I mean, they infiltrated the government in a way that is unprecedented, and they filed something like 5,000 lawsuits against the IRS, against individual members of the IRS, and blackmailed them and put so much pressure on them that the IRS dropped their, like, billion-dollar suit against the Church of Scientology, and because they were threatening taking away the religion status from Scientology that would have then left them with something like a $1 billion bill that would have destroyed them. So the IRS, the Church of Scientology, for what it's worth, I mean, they're, you know, whatever. I'm not going to cast aspersions here for no reason. I don't like them, but they are the one group that straight up went to war with the IRS and won.
Oh, they won big time.
Yeah.
Well, it's one superior private corporation defeating another private corporation.
Yeah, it's called Operation Snow White, I think is what was the name of the operation. They have actually infiltrated the CIA and the government and the FBI and stole documents and blackmailed the IRS. But yeah, it's corporate wars.
Okay, speaking of corporate wars, I kind of want to bring this up. I kind of misstated myself earlier. I don't want to correct myself about Gaddafi. He was actually going to go to the euro with his gold. It was Hussein that was going to go to dinar and the gold or whatever. But how NATO looks at us, basically, we're the front men for NATO. And we're expected to go ahead and take these wars over to the next level. It's like we talked about earlier with Saudi Arabia and Yemen. You know, does anybody really believe that we're not involved in that war at all? You know, it's Saudi-led is what they're saying with the coalition and, you know, 10 nations and yada, yada, yada. But who really in their right mind doesn't believe that we don't have our hands in that war? I mean, it was caught on video with American mercenaries over in Ukraine fighting that war with Russia. So who doesn't think that we're not involved with somebody that we say is a huge ally of ours?
And we're in the midst of, during Obama's tenure, of selling them something like $30 billion in arms, man. I mean, that's a lot of weaponry for a country of that size with that kind of military. And they're still kind of losing because they can't fight a guerrilla warfare, and Iran's, you know, backing up the Houthi youth. But, you know, who knows if they pull out the F-15s and 16s and risk them. I mean, they could do some destruction. And, man, it's just going to hit civilians. It's going to get ugly.
Well, it's already happened. I mean, there's been 1,300 civilians killed in Yemen already. And I think we heard about it a little more when Israel was bombing the Gaza Strip and killing just civilians, just ridiculously killing civilians. And I think because of the nations involved in that, because it was Israel and everybody kind of has their ear to the ground when it comes to Israel, even though the corporate media portrayed it as Israel's right, Israel's right, Israel's right, and we all still from the other side kept our ear to the ground on what was going on in Gaza and heard about all these atrocities. But with Yemen, you know, what connection do we have really at all to that? And maybe we're not paying attention to that enough because there are human beings dying over there for absolutely no reason. I mean, is that something that we should focus on? Is that something that is important, that should be brought to the forefront, that the Saudi-led coalition, and when the word Saudi-led is heard anywhere, that is something that, you know, should ring in people's ears. The Bushes are hanging out with the Saudis for decades. The Clintons are taking money from the Saudis for decades. That's us. That's us backing something.
Yeah, it's a very problematic geopolitical connection, and I don't think the vast majority of people fully understand how entrenched it is and how much it has shaped, you know, the geopolitical landscape.
And what kind of spillover now? I mean, God, Yemen is a horrible place because the people really don't have anywhere to go. They're in really poor construction. And when any kind of bombs land, I mean, I've been watching some videos where, you know, something that would level a building over here because of code will knock out like 20 around it and people inside are just crushed. And that's where you're getting these huge tolls. And that's why I'm saying if they bring out the big guns, meaning their advanced air warfare stuff, and start just dropping smart bombs because we're giving them to them, it's just going to be a nightmare.
Yeah, I think you make a great point, DB. But at the same time, like, I think at least when that happened in Gaza, at least the activists, like, they raised their hands up and said, why is this happening? Why is this going on? But, you know, I don't think the activists are as quick to jump on board of Yemen, not because they're against Yemen, but because it's more pushed to the background and pushed to the side because it's not Israel. And everybody's already got, you know, their hand raised to look at Israel and say, you're up to something. And people just ignore everything Saudi Arabia does. And to me, that's the most infuriating thing about, especially the United States and the support that we've given countries in that region. We've given as much support to Saudi Arabia as we've given to Israel. And, okay, we talked about this last night, and we discussed in the article that's on theantimedia.org right now, is that the United States talks about how they want to liberate countries, and they want countries to be free, and this is what we're about, and this is what we're going to do. Well, that's a complete lie, because they support Saudi Arabia, and yet they've been ranked by human rights, all the people that rank all that, the Human Rights Watch, I know for sure, and I think there's another one too, that rank Saudi Arabia as a nation with zero freedoms. They rank them as their bottom. There's only 10 countries in the world that they rank. North Korea is one of them. And they say no freedoms. So we support them, and we attack their enemies. Ironically, we're the same country that put in the Shah in Iran in the 50s. And then when they rebelled against the tyrants we put in front of them, then we had a problem with them. So when America says, or the United States says, that we're going to give you freedom, what we really mean is we want to install a dictatorship to control what you do. And when we get that dictatorship, we're never going to have a problem with you again. We don't care if you behead people right and left. We don't care who you bomb. We don't care what you do, as long as we control the special interest in your country.
Right. And in reality, the images and the and us seeing the Western world, particularly Americans, seeing these beheadings, or at least hearing the news of them, further just foments this idea of a brutal Islamic world that is out to get us, you know, that's a danger, and it kind of just cements this kind of ongoing perpetual war with Islam, unfortunately.
You know what is just insane, man, is, you know, you have a lot of these politicians that put these words, liberation and freedom, they put it in front of the American people and say, we're going to make all these countries free. And, you know, you have the majority of Americans like, yeah, freedom, liberty. But at the end of the day, the majority of Americans, they don't give a shit if these countries are free. That's the last thing on their mind. They go on with their life and do whatever, dude. They could care less, man. And you got all, you know, they're over here bombing these people's countries, man, and destroying these people's homes, man. And the average American, they don't care. It doesn't matter if these countries are free to them or not.
But I think you're right on some level, and I think you're wrong on some level. And the reason I think you're wrong is a psychological level, because I think that there are these people that see what the United States does, and they live through it vitriolically on some level. It's like, you know, anybody that's ever met me knows that I'm a huge Alabama football fan.
Right.
And at certain points of the year, you get wrapped up in that thing. And I think there's people that live through that ideal 365 days a year through their country and their flag, and they think that this can do no wrong.
Right.
Okay, this flag can do no wrong. So when they hear that we're going over there to liberate somebody, there's a part of them that says, okay, I'm satisfied because we're accomplishing our mission. This is what we're about. We're about freedom. We're right, about freedom. Right, we're right, about liberating right. people. That's what they believe. And
liberating
then, yeah,
liberating them. I was just going to say, you made a great point, because we really do liberate them from their natural resources.
I think that's the point of the night, EB, and that's what we're doing. But at the same time, we have supported so many tyrants, dictators, and we're seeing it right now. Like, this isn't – and here's the thing I think about what we all do is we sit here and we try to relate history to the present, and we try to give people information, and there's people that want to reject that. Okay, and when you talk about things that happened 20 years ago or 30 years ago, you're always, always going to have that person say, but that was a long time ago. That don't have nothing to do with me. I don't know. We're talking about Saudi Arabia in present time that are doing these things and committing these atrocities. The reason that country, to me, is geopolitically so valid in this argument is because we can pinpoint to it now, today. We're not talking about Iran in the 1950s and the Shah. That's happening now, and we're supporting it. Nothing has changed. And yet people don't want to wake up to the reality that we're about co-sponsoring dictators for our own financial gain and corporations, and people have no interest in freedom or liberation. It's about money.
And I'll just add a quote that's very famous. He who controls the present controls the past. He who controls the past controls the future. And that's never been more real than right now, because if we look 70 years back at the most important event that ever happened and the most people that ever died from a war, then you know why the world's reality is the way it is, and you have to understand that most of the stuff we've been taught is pretty much bogus.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, Jake.
No, I agree with that, and it's kind of a mind screw to start thinking about the history of the 20th century as just this kind of constructed narrative. Obviously, some of what we've learned, basic facts may be true, but they've been woven, winner writes history, and it's just kind of weird to, try and look out from inside, the matrix, the narrative that we're given, and try and piece together what could actually be true. If you try and do it dispassionately sometimes, it's hard because it's just so frustrating, but it's actually intellectually stimulating, I would say. So I guess I just really like Stevie's quote there.
And it's insulting on a level if you're any kind of an intellectual, because at some point they got to level with people or else just get rid of everyone that knows something's up. And maybe that's right. maybe that's the option they're going to try to take. But, 10, 20 million people go missing or something like that in America, it's not going to just be something they can let go over.
Yeah, and I tell you what, and that reminds me of something. DB, we were up in Philadelphia, a month ago, 2 months ago?
Yeah, it was a couple months ago now.
Okay, and we both got to meet Laura Eisenhower, who is Dwight Eisenhower's great-granddaughter.
Wow.
Yeah, and to me, it's funny because we're talking about how people buy into politics and they're very selective about the history that they believe, and that's entirely true, but it's the selectivity is so insane. Is we have Eisenhower, who was a Republican, who came into office and said, as somebody that's been to war and seen men die, I don't want to do that. And you know what? He pulled back from Korea and ended that. Didn't go to war, balanced the budget 3 times. And I'm not saying he was the greatest man ever. He wasn't. But to me, the most important thing the man ever did was when he was leaving office, he warned the nation.
Yeah.
And told everybody the military-industrial complex is coming. And this is a guy that was a general, was never elected to any other office in this country outside the President of the United States. This is somebody that looks at as some sort of, Republican hero, whatever. And he warned everybody. He said, this is happening. This is coming. Be prepared. Within 5 years, we had seen the President of the United States had his head blown off in broad daylight, and we were so entrenched in Vietnam, we didn't know how to get ourselves out of it.
Yeah, and you know, that's a good point. I'm actually been thinking about writing an article about, like, the, you know, presidential quotes that have, you know, portray something going on that they couldn't otherwise have gotten away with saying. Of course, he said it straight out, but, you know, there's Kennedy's, you know, infamous speech where he talks about the secret societies and whatnot. And, when presidents say creepy things, you got to listen, you know, and it means something. They're not saying it for no reason.
Absolutely. Go ahead, DB.
The only reason Eisenhower didn't suffer anything from that was he literally had the military-industrial complex at that time getting his back. I mean, he was the most celebrated general of all time. So nobody was going to touch the guy, and he could say what he pleased, and he was an insider's insider simply because he'd won World War II or been a big part of it. And he, I mean, if anything happened to him, can you imagine the amount of military men that would go after you?
It was similar to Smedley Butler, kind of, though.
He was Smedley Butler on steroids.
Right.
So to an extent, it was almost kind of like a press release for, here comes the military-industrial complex, because he knew no one was going to touch him, you know?
And exactly.
They just bragging.
Yeah, you're right, Jake. And here's the thing that's so scary is he was a Republican, and look at Republicans today. They're the most war-hungry, crazy lunatics on the planet.
Because it's ideological.
Much different party back then, you know.
Much different because, you know, nowadays we have the entire civil rights movement of Republicans are racist and that and this. And, you know, Democrats want to save you from, you know, being, you know, people hating on you. But let me tell somebody from the South. In the South, it was the Republicans that stood up for the whole civil rights thing. I mean, they're completely different parties. Everything's changed. Those parties don't even exist anymore.
Oh, yeah, they're pretty much the same
party. George Wallace stood in the doorway of the University of Alabama as a Democrat. Don't forget that.
We need to start the Afghan Whig Party.
I don't even know what that means, but it's funny.
Well, Afghan Kush and the Whig Party, but anyway.
Oh, okay. I missed a word there. Sorry. Yeah. Hey, don't forget, man. I'm from Arkansas, born and raised. So I feel your southern plight.
Yeah, I do forget that, you know, because I think you've intellectually surpassed so many people that are still stuck in this realm that we have to deal with on a day-to-day basis.
Oh, man, there's just as many idiots in California.
Well, personally,
and up here.
Personally, I am completely indiscriminatory about who I think are idiots because I think most everybody's an idiot. So I've always gone on record to say that. I do not discriminate about who I think is a moron. I think everyone is a moron.
And they're all different. North, south, east, and west.
They are, and they all choose their own stupid thing to believe in.
I guess I meant racist. I guess I meant there's just as many racists here. They're just better at because I guess that was your original point, right? Is that that there's an alleged race breakdown between Democrats and Republicans, right?
Oh, absolutely. But I'll tell you this, as far as politics goes, at least where I'm at, sitting here in Birmingham, Alabama, race has more to do and less to do with politics than you believe. I mean, we're sitting here in Birmingham, Alabama, and we've had a black mayor in the city of Birmingham, you know, which is historically considered the most racist city in the world. We've had a black mayor since 1980 and hadn't seen a white one since. You know, so people have very misconstrued perceptions of what history is, and they look at things, but at the same time, we're talking about some place in Missouri that's had this huge outbreak. You know, a lot of the old southern places had to deal with a lot of this stuff years ago and deal with it head on and confront it, and it was not pretty and it was very ugly. But a lot of the rest of the country kind of just looked from afar and said, oh, that is what that is. How dare you horrible people do that? And now they're having to deal with those repercussions because they never addressed it. I think a lot of the South did address it.
Right, yeah. I think that's a good point, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, I guess they were forced to, you know, come to grips with it after they'd been crushed by the union, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? And to me, it's one of the, you know, the quotes from Seinfeld, it's the Band-Aid one motion right off. The South had to deal with that crap. And that's not to say, and trust me, because I grew up living in Birmingham, and we've had Kelvin on the show many times. He's the closest thing I've ever had to a brother in my life, and he's black, and we both, growing up, we're just like, neither one of us got where all this racism was. We both moved outside of Birmingham at some point and go, oh, that's where it's at. So the state of Alabama has still got some hillbilly, redneck, crazy racist people. I'm not going to say they don't. But when you live where it actually went down, people don't care.
Yeah, it's actually really, I guess you can say, progressive in its thinking. It's not... People still have that idea that it's like that, but it's really not, man. I mean, it's cool. Nobody's messing with anybody, man. No, everybody's cool, man. Ain't nobody trying to mess with anybody. I mean, it's yeah. Not a bad place, man. I mean,
no, it's horrible. Yes. I'll tell you, I'll be the first person to tell you it's horrible, but it has nothing to do with race.
Well, no, I get it, and it's the same with Little Rock, Arkansas. Like Little Rock is like a cool like it's a good, like, cool city, and it gets a bad rap because people think of, you know, the Ozarks and the hillbillies and the rednecks and whatnot, and it gives Little Rock a bad name. And yeah, I'd actually like to visit Birmingham, but some of those southern cities are really great, thriving metropolitans where people are, you know, actively trying to deal with issues like class and race and stuff like that.
Well, I think Birmingham. I don't want to get into this topic, but I think Birmingham is dealing with a class issue right now that has nothing to do with the black or white. I do think that the race issues here were confronted, and I think once you get outside of the city limits of Birmingham, that you do confront them again. But, you know, it's about people dealing with reality, and I think Birmingham in the 60s had to deal with reality because you had some horrible, evil people that are bombing churches, and you had cops that were shooting children in the back, and you had some horrendous things going on here, and it had to be confronted. You had to have the National Guard called in here. And when we're talking about somewhere in Missouri, you're talking about somewhere in the Northwest, and or whatever it is, it's like you people never had to experience this stuff, and you've kind of lived on this, like, cloud over here, and you just think that's never going to happen to you, but it does. That's reality. These things are going to be confronted. And is it to Birmingham's benefit that they dealt with it early? I don't know, because it was so out in the open, and the wound was so deep, because it was so terrible what happened here. DB, what are your thoughts? You're a historian, I know.
Oh man, that we got to save that for another show almost.
Yeah.
I couldn't even do it justice, man. That's opening is such a multi that's like a Hydra show.
Yeah, it really is, but at the end of the day, I think that the one thing I can say about what's going on here, and I think you'll attest to this, Jake, being from Little Rock, is that people here recognize people as people, and that's something that I've always been big on, is, to be honest, like, when you hear a news story in the corporate media and they say a white cop killed a black kid or a black person killed a white person or whatever it is, that infuriates me. I don't care. I don't care that they had a different hue of skin color. You know, a human killed a human, and people want to use they want to use those definitions as dividing lines to keep dividing us as a human race. And it infuriates me to no end, is why can't we address everybody as a human being And we've seen it with the Rachel Dolezal case, is we've all, you know, had it brought up, is there's no biological difference in race. Well, you know what? I believe in that. There is no biological difference. We all have different cultures, and I understand that, and that is what that
absolutely
is.
Absolutely, yep.
But
hey, man, there's power, and there's power and money to be held and maintained by dividing the people. And, you're right. There is such a real thing called Southern hospitality in the South, and people treat, unless you give them a reason not to, most places in the South, people are going to treat you like a person, no matter who you are, no matter what you look like, you know, and it's a real thing. I agree with you.
Yeah, but you know, to me, it's not even so much about the South. It's about that. Why can't, and trust me, I'm definitely not whatsoever claiming the South is progressive in any way, because I'm not at all. But what I am saying is why can't we understand that, you know, there's not these biological differences between us, and why can't we treat people for who they are and what they do and what they try to achieve in life and what they preach and how they practice what they preach? Why can't we get to that point in society where that's what we deal with, where we deal with people on an individual basis, instead of all of a sudden saying, well, this person's from Saudi Arabia or Iran or whatever, and then, or you know, they're black, they're white, they're whatever, they're Mexican, they came over here, all Mexicans are horrible because one person, you know, got welfare. That's how this country works, and it sickens me.
Because subcultures are so prevalent here, and like Europe's starting to get a taste of that at an uncontrolled pace with all their immigration just unchecked, whereas we actually do truly have like a kind of a melting pot here, at least among a few things. I mean, generally speaking, by the time you have a child here, they're integrated into American society fully and basically don't even really self-realize that they're that culture anymore. So look at it either way you want. One way or another, you know, people come together and live, and they just, you either have to get used to each other, or there's just a constant strife.
Yeah, I think that with what SM is saying is, I think that culturally, like where we are now culturally, I think that we are headed, in my opinion, I think that we are headed into that direction. I think that we're in a better place now than where we were 20 years ago. And I think that we're in a better place now than where we were 40 years ago.
Well, I think everybody would agree with that. I mean, even in the city that we're in, when it was just atrocities were prevalent, is that we were dealing with places in this very city that we're sitting in right now, is you're making people based on the hue of the color of their epidermis has to drink from two different color or two different water fountains. Yeah. That's insane. That's Satan himself.
I agree, but I'd say in race relations and gay rights and possibly women's rights, we're better off than we were 20 years ago. But I'd say in a lot of other issues, we're probably way worse off. I don't know.
I think intellectually we're way worse off than we were 20 years ago. And the reason I believe that is because I think celebrity culture has predominantly crept into such a level. And I think it's always been here. And I think I would be a complete moron to say that, oh, yeah, that's something new. It's not anything new. It's been going on forever. And everything's been a big distraction forever. But the E! Channel has very high ratings for a reason. TMZ has higher ratings than MSNBC for a reason. And I'm not telling people to go watch MSNBC, but I think everybody gets my point.
Well, people know who, people can tell you who, it's kind of strange because I see a lot of videos like on the internet where you have people go around and they ask like basic questions like the founding of our country and state capitals. There's not a lot of people these days, I guess you can say in the younger generations, who can tell you basic information about America, but they can tell you so much more stuff that's going on in our pop culture.
Mark Dice has made a career out of it.
Yeah, it's a dismal state, and it's really truly terrifying, especially with, you know, kind of the technocracy we're delving into, where, you know, kids are they're mediating their whole experience with the world through a smartphone, and it's really terrifying to think of an entire generation now going through puberty through a smartphone, you know, and all the information they're getting from that. You're right. People don't know their roots. They don't know the history of the country. I mean, even the false history of the country that they would learn in their history books. There's got to be some kind of doubling down on education at the local level. But, you know, I guess parents have to own that at some point.
And what is Common Core? I mean, I've been seeing that Texas book depositories are basically dictating the educational requirements for the entire country. Do we really want Texas to be the place where we source our material from?
I'll say this.
Hey, dude, I'm a big state, dude.
I don't want a Texas book depository doing anything for me ever again. I've heard enough about that.
You know, there's something I've actually been wanting to bring up, but has every a few months ago, I got curious and started reading about who's writing the textbooks. And there's a corporation that actually bought out a major textbook company, like during the recession, a major corporation, and they're called Apollo Global Management, bought out McGraw Hill, which I don't know about.
I remember McGraw Hill.
I don't know around the country in regional areas. I don't know who they use for textbooks, but I know that here in the South, we use a lot of stuff made by McGraw-Hill. Well, a corporation called Apollo Global Management bought them out during the recession. This corporation's worth like $130 billion. They own Caesar's Palace. They own all kinds of stuff, and they pretty much have a monopoly on our textbooks. They're the ones writing our textbooks.
That sounds like a win.
Great piece of great info drop there. I wrote that down. I'm gonna look that up, man. I'm gonna look into that.
All right, gentlemen. Look, we got 3 minutes left. I'm gonna go ahead and go to you, Chase. Give us any parting words you have for us.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on the show, dude. Always love it.
Fantastic. Jake, rant for me, sir.
Well, I guess since I did this whole thing comparing Hillary Clinton to Jeb Bush, I guess I would say, I'm going to take a lot of heat from it, from people, you know, claiming that, oh, she's so good on women's rights and whatnot. And I guess I would have to say that let's start taking a look at the real overarching issues that are really screwing us up right now. Things like TPP and bailing out the banks and things like that. And let's really kind of, you know, like with a to-do list, you got to make a to-do list, and you got to get the first two done before you move on to the next. Let's start at the top, and let's figure out what's really screwing us up right now, and let's get these damn banks out of here, for God's sakes.
Hey, man, and I think you make an incredible point, in saying, you know what, we don't need to get distracted by the news story next week. We need to focus on the problem and deal with it before we get distracted by something else next week. Also, I want to let you know about your story that you've got out right now on theantimedia.org. Everybody check that about Hillary and Jeb Bush. Yesterday, my article about Saudi Arabia, I was definitely threatened with being beheaded myself, so don't feel too bad about people hating. DB, what you got on your mind?
Everybody that has $1,500 saved up, I would do a put on gold. If it gets over 1,500 an ounce, you're probably going to at least triple or quadruple by the end of the year.
Do it. Really? Our own Max Kaiser right here telling us we're doing best.
How should I buy it? There's multiple ways to do it. Should I buy coins or what?
Go to a shop, buy it in cash.
I tell you what, we will see y'all tomorrow night on Anti-Media Radio. This is SM Gibson out. Thank you so much to everybody that joined us tonight. Blow through the
I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.